Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday edition of The Drive as we are on the road, on location here for the remainder of this week. Bill and Dan, and we are here at Sky Bar downtown.
One of our favorite places to do The Drive. Always thrilled when our pals at Sky Bar invite us downtown. Celebrating 20 years with the big party last month. And you know, first home football weekend of the year.
That's right, celebrating the home opener.
Yeah, I would expect three busy nights here at Sky Bar, and that includes the post game celebrations that I think folks are expecting to have all season long here at Sky Bar right after they
there better be one Saturday night
right after they hit Toomer's Corner. Sky Bar passed out a little bit of the toilet paper. This past Saturday, I think that might be a new tradition they're starting up.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Well, Auburn, of course, at home for the first time, hosting Ball State. The Cardinals come in after a 31-0 loss to Purdue this past week. Of course, the Tigers, 38-24 winners over Baylor in Waco.
A lot can change in 1 year, but Purdue was quite possibly the worst major conference team in college football.
Definitely the worst team in the Big Ten.
Last season, and to see them just control Ball State in that matter, it had to be, you know, pretty dejecting for Ball State. Mm-hmm. And then the thought that you have to face an Auburn team now that's you know, more dangerous than Purdue virtually everywhere if you're looking at the personnel. This one's going to be an uphill matchup. I think that, you know, the question is how long is this game competitive, or can Auburn do what they need to do and put this game away early and start using the time to experiment with some of the different looks they could offer later in the year.
And, you know, the last few years, it seems like there have been games that you felt those opportunities were going to come, and occasionally they did, but a lot of times they didn't. And you'll see it many times, not just from Auburn, where teams, you know, sort of slop around a little bit. It's going to be interesting to see how Auburn does play this week after that big win. And, look, let's face it, they don't have another big ball game, really, for a couple of weeks until they head to Norman, Oklahoma. So, I mean, you want to not have the team looking ahead and playing sloppy. You want to be improving. And Auburn's got some things to improve on from last week.
And I think there are some players from last week that may get opportunities this week to show that they can be part of the answer. And you know, the thought of, you know, I think there are some players that are on pretty strict pitch counts this weekend. I think there are also some players that are that you may not see at all. Demari Alston.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if you see Demari. You're not going to see Champ Anthony.
I think Hugh Freeze told somebody today. I don't know when he was talking to the media.
He talked to the media. There was a short time with Hugh after practice.
Okay, so Hugh Freeze mentioned that he was probably not. You probably weren't going to see. You probably weren't going to see Demari Alston on Saturday.
Reason. I mean, really, no reason to. I mean, he could go if necessary if it were a big ball game. But, I mean, you've got a couple of weeks. And you have other options that you'd like to get a better look at there at running back.
You'd love for Demari to have a big statistical season in his last year in college football. But aside from that, I don't know what he has to prove these next 2 weeks.
No, that's right.
And you're right, it could be a blessing in disguise, because not only could it help Damari's chances of being totally healthy when Auburn goes to Norman, Oklahoma and College Station later in the month, you're also probably going to see Jeremiah Cobb take the biggest shoulder, the biggest load that he's ever had as part of the offense.
I don't think there's any question about that.
I think Jeremiah Cobb's in line for several big plays on Saturday. And, Bill, I've been rewatching The Wire. Omar's coming. You know what I mean? Omar's on his way.
I think so. I think this is his debut. It's going to be Saturday. I'd be very surprised if we don't see a good bit of Omar Mapson.
Yeah, excited for that debut. And then I think Auburn, you know, even at, like, you know, something you mentioned earlier, it is important for Jackson to get some rapport going with guys like Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton, Malcolm Simmons. I think Auburn wouldn't mind seeing some of the other guys in the receiver room play some more snaps, and you get a better idea of how much. I don't think Bryce played in the game against Baylor. Duke Smith is somebody who impressed and could make a case for a little bit of playing time. Sam Turner was getting thrown the ball this week, so I think Auburn's got some. I think Auburn's got some options that they can go to.
334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline. We'll get to your calls in a little while, but right now we're going to head to the Drive Hotline. Welcome in our regular third here on Thursdays. He's normally with us, but he's going to be covering the huge high school game tonight over in Opelika. Auburn-Opelika tonight, a big, big ball game over at Bulldog Stadium. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer joining us before he heads into the big matchup tonight between Auburn and Opelika. Ferg, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. How are y'all?
Doing all right. Good to talk to you. We are just outside the entrance here at Skybar, a few steps from Toomer's Corner, and hopefully that's a busy spot Saturday night as Auburn looks to put away Ball State. But I'd sort of love your thoughts. Where do you want to start here, Bill? You want to start with Auburn Opelika? You want to start with Ferg's thoughts about the game Friday night? He was there in the press box with me in Waco.
Let's go ahead since let's start with Friday night and thoughts from Waco. I've read some of the comments there on the Observer, and look, I mean, there's no question it was a solid performance for Auburn. I mean, when you win by two touchdowns on the road against a quality opponent, that is definitely solid. But I mean, there were definitely some things that Auburn needs to get cleaned up as they head on into the season and again into conference play here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, 100%. I think the biggest thing for Auburn is how much this win did not look like 2024 Auburn. And what I mean by that is, like, I kept thinking during the second half of that game with Auburn just sticking to the running game, letting it eat that way, how much they didn't do that against Oklahoma last season, the decision-making from the head coach and the offensive play calling to the quarterbacks. It just, I thought, Auburn didn't do that last season and it cost them in games. They do it in this game and it's the reason why they won. To not get greedy throwing the ball downfield when it's not there, to say, hey, we're winning at the line of scrimmage, they're sitting back with a too high defense and we're just going to run it right at them. Keeping up with that, I think, was really big. And I thought you saw Jackson Arnold, not throw the ball a ton, but make really, really good decisions and make the plays when he absolutely needed to the most. And that's what you needed from him. And he looked like a guy who could be the upgrade Auburn's been wanting at the quarterback spot. So, I mean, the fact that Auburn came out of that game with a win, doing things they didn't really do much last season on a regular basis, finishing drive, scoring in the red zone, running the ball, not getting greedy through the air, making really good decisions at quarterback, I think that's going to end up going a long way. I think the defensive stuff Auburn struggled with on Friday night can be fixed. I think they've got, stuff they can use these next 2 weeks to tighten up. But I do also think Auburn, on the defensive front just dominated that game. And, one of the big reasons why Baylor, even though they had all those passing yards, wasn't able to win that game is because Auburn's defensive front did enough to help turn them away in the red zone, stop the running game, get the pressure on Sawyer Robertson, and make some big plays there late. So thought it was a really, really good all-around win from Auburn. Plenty of stuff to improve, plenty of stuff you can work on. But if you can walk out of Baylor, a team that went to a bowl game last season and could be one of the better teams in the Big 12 this year, if you can walk out of there winning a game with maybe a B-minus effort from your team, I think that says a lot about where Auburn could be headed.
Yeah, and you also saw Auburn win short yardage on offense, which was a problem last year. The word we sort of landed on the podcast, Justin, was identity. You can wonder how much of it was Baylor, but at the same time, Jackson Arnold ran the ball effectively last year against Alabama. Like this is something that's been sustainable at different parts of his of his college football career. And I thought that, yeah, seeing Auburn, seeing Auburn succeed in some of those situations had to be, had to be really impressive. I guess there's a question about the passing game and what's going to happen if Auburn needs more of it. But all told, I think Hugh Freeze had to be pretty pleased with what he saw offensively, as opposed to a defense that did seem to be a little more disjointed than we were expecting.
Yeah, the second and third levels of the defense, I think, did not have a good game. And the Auburn's corners were fine, solid. The safeties and the linebackers, and those were two position groups that had new rotations, new faces, and new pieces and new spots there. They struggled. I mean, Baylor had a ton of plays, yardage to slot receivers and tight end, and that really cost them. They busted coverage on the back end. That was really costly at the end of the first half. A lot of missed tackles. I think for Auburn, you can clean up a ton from that, right? They looked sluggish. They didn't look sharp. You got to spend these next 2 weeks. I think when you play Ball State and South Alabama and say, okay, the stuff that we can control, can you get better at it? Can you clean it up? Can you look good in those areas before you head out to face an Oklahoma team in a couple weeks that, should be really, really good at throwing the football around the yard? So I think that's going to be really important for them. But I did think Auburn's defensive front played really well in this game. I thought the fact that Baylor could not run the ball, especially in the second half, really hurt them from finishing those kind of drives, that Auburn was able to finish off. And, Auburn was able to win the time of possession that way. And I also thought, Auburn did a good job of getting after Sawyer Robertson. I know he had a lot of yards, but he was under duress, got hit a good bit. His completion percentage wasn't fantastic either. So I think the defensive front did their job. But the second and the third levels can tighten things up over these next couple weeks. This could still be a really good defense. But I do think the good news is for Auburn is that, I don't come out of that Baylor game thinking – any of the problems they had in week one against on the defense side aren't fixable. I think it's just a lot of stuff they can sharpen.
Ferg, a little more about the defensive front. I mean, it's really interesting combination. I mean, we knew Malik Blockton and Bobby Jamison Travis, but I thought good performances from new faces that both transfers and youngsters. I mean, Jay Hardy, I thought, played pretty well. Zeke Walker getting a chance to shut.
He's neither of those things.
Well,
though.
He's not a new face, but he's back.
Yeah.
He was gone, and now he's back.
I love seeing Jay and Zeke. Right?
Yeah, those two guys are sixth-year guys that I thought played as well as I've seen them play at Auburn. And then you've got the youngsters, the Jordan Crawford and, Darion Smith. I mean, there's some really – really intriguing combination of talent there on the defensive front.
I think a really good sign for this team was that they rotated as much as they said they wanted to, and you didn't really notice any sort of drop-off. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, oh, well, Malik Blockton's not in on the field, or, heck, even Keldrick Falk's not out there on the field. Auburn's got no shot to make these plays. I thought Dallas Walker had a really good game
at
nose tackle. Yeah. I thought Amaris Williams played really well, coming off the edge. And just a number of those guys. I thought that defensive front really, really came to play. If you want to throw in the Bucks, the edge rushers there, Kieron Crawford with his first sack. I thought Chris Murray had a great debut at Auburn. You got Jared Smith in there a little bit as well. So, that was a group that I think, stuck to its plan. They were going to rotate. They were going to stay fresh. And while I think the second and third levels of the defense weren't as sharp with their depth, Auburn's defensive front definitely was. And there's a huge reason why. Those guys for Baylor, you get, those same five guys blocking – the constant rotation of blue chip talent, veteran transfers that Auburn's got on the defensive front, it can really hurt. And then Keldrick Falk looked like every bit of the first round pick that he's supposed to be, and that's just, it makes this defense a lot more dangerous. I think that defensive front could buy some time for the linebackers and the safeties and those groups to kind of get cleaned up. I think especially these next couple of weeks, they could eat. Ball State's offensive line might be in them for a long night on Saturday night, considering how much they struggled against Purdue. I mean, Purdue will probably be a better team this year, but they ain't got Keldrick Falk, and they ain't got, 10 guys that they can rotate. They were all really good prospects coming out of high school.
No, if you can win the line of scrimmage, you've got a great shot. And I thought Auburn did on both sides. Off defense, you mentioned the defensive line, but the offensive line, the debut for Auburn's new outside guys, their tackles, was pretty darn good.
And I think it's pretty remarkable that when you're talking about a game where Sawyer Robertson throws for that many yards, Auburn doesn't seem displeased with the way Kay and Lee or Jay Crawford played.
No,
it wasn't necessarily
Sean Pleasant.
It
no.
wasn't necessarily the outside.
I think the outside corners played well. I think fairly well. You know, they wasn't perfect, but you know, your issues were in the middle.
And
right.
The thought that you're saying that about a game where Baylor throws for well over 400 yards, I think is a testament to how well those guys actually played and the need for improvement up the middle. Hugh Freeze said it wasn't just personnel; it was also strategy. You know, if he could do it again, he probably would have put some different matchups on Trigg. And on the Baylor slot receiver options, is there a younger player that you find yourself particularly excited to see this weekend, next weekend, get an opportunity to work their way into the rotation in the secondary?
I think it's a natural time to watch more of Eric Winters and Newbook Fagans. I think Winters had a good amount of snaps against Baylor. Came down with an interception or two. That was big. Newboy only got one snap on defense, but I think he's a guy that makes a ton of sense if you're missing Champ Anthony for at least a couple weeks to get him in there. Yeah, I think if your veteran safeties had a little bit of tougher games and you had, you know, Champ Anthony, banged up right now, makes sense to go to the kids, makes sense to go to the freshmen. I also think, you know, we have a bigger book on a guy like Caleb Harris playing well than the type of performance that he had Friday against Baylor. I'm willing to chalk that up as an off night. He's got to get these next couple weeks to tighten up in that area. It was a rough game for him, but, you know, this is a guy who was a really good player for Auburn last season. So I think if those veterans can kind of tighten up the areas that gave him issues on Friday night against Baylor, and some of the kids can get some quality reps in, I think you're going to be fine long-term at the safety spot.
Burke, can you stick with us for a few more minutes, at least another segment?
Yeah, I can do one more segment.
All right, cool. Yeah, we'll get to our first break. Want to wrap up thoughts on Baylor and look at Ball State, and then get some thoughts on Auburn-Opelika tonight as we continue. Justin Ferguson with the Auburn Observer is with us here as we are coming to you from Skybar on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive, 6-7, and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday. Bill and Dan coming to you from Skybar downtown. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer is usually with us, getting ready to cover Auburn-Opelika football. Yes, they're playing tonight over at Bulldog Stadium. You can hear all the action on Wings 94.3, pregame 6:30, kickoff at 7 o'clock. We'll talk a little bit about that in just a couple of minutes. But, Ferg, I mean, here, Ball State coming in, as you mentioned, they struggled last week against a Purdue team that was not very good a year ago. Should be an opportunity for Auburn to give more playing time to quite a few players. And I thought it was interesting, Hugh Freeze today, following practice, saying that Deuce Knight is going to be the number two guy.
Yeah, that makes sense. He mentioned that, you know, Ashton Daniels could get another year, of eligibility, and you want to be smart about playing guys like that and, you know, what you want to do there. But, yeah, Deuce Knight has been looking like the number two quarterback for Auburn really the last couple of weeks. Makes a ton of sense. I would expect Auburn to be in a position to play Deuce Knight in this game. And, yeah, I mean, first home game, get your five-star out and turn him loose. And I think – you know, it's a good spot, especially with, you know, Jackson Arnold having a good game in week one, and now in week two, you know, gets off to a good start in week two. You can turn it over to Deuce, let Deuce get some valuable experience for the future. And I think that's the best case scenario. And, you know, you won't have to worry about any sort of controversy or anything like that. Now just let QB2 do some QB2 stuff, on Saturday night. I think that would be the best case scenario for Auburn, and it's something they're looking at.
It's a testament to the work Hugh Freeze has done improving this roster.
Oh, no question.
I think that the fact that you have players like Deuce, and I would put Duke Smith in this category, and maybe even to an extent Omar, although you've had talent at running back the last couple of seasons. But the fact that it's almost like a novelty that you're going to see these guys, and not that they are focal points of this year's
team.
They
have to be in there playing prominent minutes.
It's exciting to get to see them, and I won't be shocked at all if Deuce gets in and he connects with another one of the young guys, Sam Turner or Duke Smith, on a big play. Even Bryce. We mentioned Bryce and Perry earlier as guys who you'd love to see get some confidence this week, next week.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's the ideal scenario. Remember, when you stack quality recruiting classes like Auburn has had the last couple of years, you're going to get in a situation where there's going to be some really good players who aren't in your main rotation in week one. That's just natural, right? You know, and so I think for Auburn, especially on offense, get off to a good start, put some points on the board, get into a comfortable spot where you feel like you've gotten all the first team work you want to get in there, and then, hey, let some other guys get in the game and put on a show. I don't really expect Ball State to put up a ton of a fight in this one. Purdue ripped them up pretty bad in week one, and that Purdue
especially
team was really bad last
air.
Season.
Yeah.
Yes, especially through the air. And it was interesting. I asked Freeze today after practice, like, what they expect from Ball State on defense, and he says, you know, Ball State's a quarters team. They're going to play a lot of cover four. They're going to use those safeties, those two high safeties, to trigger down and run support a good bit. When you go back and look from the Purdue game, Purdue took a couple of deep shots on Ball State, but not a ton. Instead, Ball State was kind of playing back, and that intermediate range was where they really thrived. And then short passes that turned into long catch and runs. So, you know, I know a lot of people are excited about, like, hey, are they going to air it out? They're going to air it out. I think they will, because I think they're going to get opportunities. I don't think, though, if Ball State sticks to their principles, I don't expect Auburn to be like, okay, let's just go throw it deep a bunch. Instead, I think those kind of pro throws, the intermediate stuff, and then the short stuff off of, like, RPOs and stuff like that, I think that's what's going to be open. And if you can run the ball well enough that Ball State just has to roll a safety down, maybe then you can kind of open it up deep downfield a ton. So I think that's what you need to expect on Saturday. I think people want to come in and start seeing guys drop bombs left and right. I think Ball State's going to play conservatively on defense and try to bail out as much as possible, keep everything in front of them. But I do think there's, you know, the Purdue game last week showed that there's some sweet spots to hit against this defense.
Right, and we were wondering after such a – I mean, Jackson Arnold had more rushing yards than anyone else in the SEC in week one. I can't imagine you would want your quarterback taking a lot of hits this week or next week for that matter. And so I imagine that might influence the play calling a little bit as, you know, what Auburn can do while not necessarily relying on Jackson to improvise a ton with his legs or even have that many designed runs.
Yeah, reduce one of the options in the RPO. That's right.
Right, yeah, a lot more just quick, like either handoff or throw it kind of RPOs, right. Which I think you'd see that. I think just on Friday night against Baylor, the way Baylor was backed off on defense, I think, you know, Auburn was like, okay, well, if we've got an even hat count with blockers and we can throw in an extra guy to be a running option, we can win the numbers game a lot more often. I don't think you're going to have to do that quite as much with Ball State.
Justin, again, going to be covering the Auburn-Opelika game for the OA News tonight. This is the 100th meeting all time between these schools. A great series. The series is really even though there have been some runs in the series lately. Auburn High has had the advantage, but, I mean, should be a great matchup tonight. It's been sold out for quite a while. Going to be on TV, on APT, but, of course, the radio broadcast on Wings 94.3. Just your thoughts on the matchup over at Bulldog Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a fun one because this series has been dominated by Auburn in the last few years. I think it's five or six in a row that the Tigers have won. But Opelika's got to be coming in brimming with confidence. They are 2-0. They've gotten off to a really good start this season, and they're playing at home. And so they should feel confident. Auburn had a very tough game last week on the road. They have really struggled in these first couple weeks to get anything really going on offense on a consistent basis. You wonder what they're going to kind of draw up and try to generate against Opelika tonight. You know, it's a team that lost a good bit of weapons, breaking in a new quarterback, breaking in a brand-new offensive line, no more Omar Mabson. I think Auburn's offense has been, you know, really searching for answers here, and what better way than to get some stuff figured out tonight against Opelika and what should be a slugfest. I think Opelika, you know, has got really good defense. They've had some timely offense in close games to start the season. So they're going to come in with confidence in this one to end the streak, to win at home. And then, you know, for Auburn High, it's what better way to bounce back from a very disappointing loss on the road than to play your biggest rival and continue the streak. So I think it's really intriguing on both sides. Like you said, we've seen a run here recently where Auburn's had the upper hand in this series, but I think the way it's set up going in, with it being at Bulldog Stadium, with Opelika playing better football here to start the season, it makes it like one of the most fascinating Auburn-Opelika games, I think, in quite some time.
Yeah, and, you know, it's huge because here we go. We open it up region play as well. It's great to have them both back in the same classification.
It's so great. And, you know, the years where, you know, Opelika was 6A and Auburn was 7A, the rivalry still means a ton. It didn't quite have the same amount of juice. The fact that this game is so big. I mean, you think Auburn-Opelika, you know, for an Opelika team wanting to get back into the playoffs, what a win over Auburn can mean for them. If you're Auburn, if you could beat Opelika, what that can mean in the region title hunt to get, you know, seeding, you know, knowing that you've got, you know, Central and Enterprise and some really, really good teams also in this region. So, yeah, I mean, it's so big for both of these teams. I think if Opelika could pull off a win, they feel like they're in a really, really good spot to have a big season. And I think if Auburn could pull off a win, it'd be a great bounce back for them and could keep them kind of on track to continue to what they've been doing here in the region for the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking forward to that one. Ferg, really appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us. Let everybody know, I mean, what's going on and coming up at the Observer, and if they don't have it, first of all, shame on them, but if they don't, how they can get it.
Yeah, it's been a big week of the Observer. Had a ton of Baylor coverage from Waco, film room on Auburn's running game, some breakdowns of what we saw and some takeaways from that Baylor game. Then looking ahead to Ball State, practice reports, interviews, a lot of good stuff we got earlier this week. Dan and I did a podcast today previewing this Ball State game and breaking down week two in college football. Tomorrow, got a huge mailbag talking all things Auburn football as well, and some more fun stuff on the way over the weekend. And, yeah, I'll be in the press box Saturday night. We'll have post-game stuff on Sunday, both in the newsletter and in the podcast with the Ball State game. So it's a great time to jump on board. AuburnObserver.com, $6 a month or $60 a year. Gets you access to everything we got. We email it to you as soon as it drops. And, these newsletters, we've kind of changed up the kind of format and the style these last couple of weeks and, had a lot of success with it. We're just trying to jam as much info of Auburn football as you can get in each one of these. So if you get a subscription, we're going to pack it in there. So AuburnObserver.com is a great time to sign up and get everything going as home weekend. It's a lot of fun. I know y'all are out there at Sky. It's Thursday. It's not quite Friday, so it's not quite game day weekend yet, but I'm feeling the buzz. I'm seeing the tent back up. It's starting to feel fun, and you know, I've missed this.
I missed
the kind of feel around town.
Traffic is not moving down on West Mag in front of us. It's busy, and you can tell football's just around the corner. I'm biased, but I'm real proud of the podcast we've done lately. Covering the football team. I hope people check him out. AuburnObserver.com. Cannot recommend it enough. He's Justin Ferguson. He's also covering Auburn Opelika tonight for the Opelika Auburn News. You can read that in the paper very, very soon. Appreciate it, Ferg.
Yep. See you guys.
All right, we will get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, I want to let you know, and thank goodness Dan reminded me yesterday. No, David Paschal will be back.
I'll tell the story. All right, last night I'm driving around, and I turn on ESPN.
I wonder when you call me, I thought, crap, what happened?
No.
Or did something happen to one of my fantasy guys or one of your guys go crazy?
It's around 9 p.m., and I tune into ESPN 106.7, and we're running a promo that we run all the time where I preview what's happening tomorrow on the drive, and this one mentions, glad I heard it, mentions Justin Ferguson and David Paschal and the light bulb.
Let me tell you, I mean, the drugs that I've had since the knee surgery or something, I apologized to David when I texted him that, I'd meant to do it and then just completely slipped my mind. And he said, they're on remote today, but give him a few minutes and he'll be with us at about 5:05.
Between last week and this week, no shortage of things in the SEC to talk about with our good buddy David Paschal.
Yeah, and there's some news from the NCAA about the transfer portal.
How about that?
We'll get to that and more when we come back from Skybar here on the Thursday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. No, I got it. I got it covered here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan, we're coming to you from Sky Bar downtown. Let's see. Here's your lineup for the weekend. Trotline Friday on the main stage. Ty Reynolds on the front stage. Saturday, Get Sideways on the main stage. Christian Yancey on the front in the front. Tonight got Throwback Thursday with Ben Brood karaoke with Jamie. So.
And they got trivia going on tonight as well, starting at 7 o'clock. Doors right at 7, so a lot going on here at Sky Bar all weekend long. Really appreciate our pals having us out here downtown, just steps from Toomer's Corner. Right?
Good throw.
Yeah, so and again,
a serious arm.
Our first time since the 20-year anniversary party, so again, happy anniversary.
Oh, yeah.
Happy 20th to our pals at Sky Bar in downtown Auburn.
All right, we were mentioning as we went to the bottom of the hour break that the NCAA is proposing a change that, boy, coaches all across the country have been wanting to the transfer portal. Going to be really interesting to see. The NCAA FBS Oversight Committee voted today to move to a single transfer window starting January 2nd and going just 10 days. Now, that doesn't mean that's the only time the players can transfer, but that's when they have to enter the portal. They cannot enter the portal until January 2nd.
That's when players have to tell their teams they're leaving.
Yes.
Otherwise, if you try to leave at any other time, if you try to leave after that window is closed, it's going to be an ordeal.
It should be about the way it used to be, where you'd have to sit out.
Teams can tell you no. Yes.
Right.
So, if they
let you go. Right.
And I think this is the best thing for college coaches who don't want to spend spring practice not knowing who's going to be on their roster, not knowing who's going to renegotiate and reopen their bidding or decide they want to go play somewhere else. I think it's totally fair for the players to be able to leave and go wherever they want. But it probably needs to be in January when you tell your team that you're leaving. Otherwise, you're putting your previous team in a real lurch. And so I get why coaches, you know, it's tough to run a program. What are you doing for 4 months if the entire team can opt into the transfer portal in April?
Yeah, you're making plans for spring practice. Then after spring practice, who knows who is going to leave? I mean, this way players are – you know, they're able to go through the entire season, the regular season, and decide whether or not they're going to stick with that school or they're going to transfer out. So it'll be a 10-day window. Interesting that the NCAA is also proposing that December be a dead period.
Yep.
As far as a recruiting context. Now, you're going to have signing for your high school and junior college signees will sign in December, but you won't be able to visit or have players visit you on campus during the month of December.
If you're talking about coaches coaching playoff games, you want them to have to worry about recruiting at the same time. You want them to have to deal with what December would mean, not just to high school recruiting, but if in the previous system, the portal being open, you know, right when the playoff windows were first revealed. No, I think this is probably a better system. I don't want to limit opportunities for players when it comes to the portal or high school players being recruited. I wonder if the players were getting a short shrift with so much going on. Now they actually get to be the center of attention when their recruiting periods are open.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I wonder if we're going to eventually just get to the one signing period as well in December.
Potentially.
Because, I mean, now you've got the major signing period in December, transfer portal opening in January, and you still have that second signing period in February while you're also trying to, if you haven't already corralled some players from the portal, you know, trying to do that as well. But the reason to keep it for 10 days is to try to allow players to be able to enter school in January and go through the winter workouts and spring practice.
I think that's the right idea. I mean, I understand that it's a minefield, sort of limiting the number of days in the portal, limiting the number of portal opportunities that players have. I think this is the best thing for all parties involved. I think it gives coaches a chance to actually, you know, have the ability to build a roster and make real plans for the season in December and January. The one thing is, you are recruiting, like the high school signing day is before the portal opens.
Yes.
Which is unfortunate because you sort of, you're signing.
Well, but you have an idea. I mean, yes, you'd like to have it the other way around.
Yes.
All right, so if that were the case, then maybe you'd get away from the December signing period and go back to the February signing period. I mean, but that eliminates your players being able to get in and enroll early.
No, you wouldn't be. I mean, you would almost need the college window to be like the last 10 days of December. And you'd need an early January.
Yeah, the problem there, the NCAA pointing out today that,
you know, thick of the playoffs.
Penn State and SMU lost their backup quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Marshall opted out of playing in a bowl game because they had so many players in the portal.
You don't want to open the portal window before you've crowned a champion, ideally, or as close to a champion.
Yeah.
Like if it's four teams. Now, you still could run into that.
You could,
with
backups, but you'd be deep into the playoffs by then.
Yeah, I mean, it's
the best. It appears to be the best possible solution. Yeah, you might have a player or two that's not playing on a championship contending team, but you're allowing players to be able to get into portal so they can go somewhere in the spring.
Look, we would love a system that crowned a champion on January 1st and then opened the portal the next day. You're not getting that. I don't think.
I mean, you could do it. You could do it.
I wonder if ESPN would want that. Like ESPN, because I think they like their windows later into January for the college football playoff. I think it would be great. Like, I think
I would love that.
If you convince the NFL.
It would make a lot of sense, but you're right. ESPN has got a lot to say about that. Let's get to the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390, sponsored by Skybar. And Brett is up first. Hey, Brett.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, guys. Dan, heard you on the Doug show today. Enjoyed hearing you on there. You too, Bill, when you're on there. But, Dan, I didn't get to hear the part where y'all made y'all's picks. Tell me who you're picking on the Oklahoma-Michigan game.
You know, and we're picking against the number with
yep.
that. I'm taking Michigan and the points in a close game. Wouldn't be shocked if Michigan won outright, but I think it's just a sloppy, low scoring. Like I think it's a race to 20. You know, I'm thinking it's.
I went all in on Michigan and Bryan's. I went ahead and just took Michigan straight up.
And I think if you think Michigan wins outright, if you're in wait and see mode with John Mateer, that's totally fair. It's a true freshman quarterback in Norman. For Michigan, I'm thinking it's like a 20-14 either way. So I went Michigan because they were getting, I think, 6.5 in our pick'em.
Yeah, well, I would think Michigan has the better running game, especially as how Oklahoma ran it against whoever it was, Southern Illinois. Well,
they picked up a couple of backs in the portal, including Jaden Ott from Cal.
Yeah,
but I don't know
yeah,
about their offensive, but their offensive line's going to be able to block for them.
And Ott only had one carry in the game this past weekend. Oddly enough, they played.
That's odd.
Yeah. An oddity.
Well, that's because he was somewhat hurt. They said he'd be fine, but still, their offensive line. I mean, like I said yesterday, 6 of their 8 who played graded out below 60%, and that's against Southern Illinois. And I think they had one of them. One
of its linemen
go down with an injury.
I'm going to be keeping an eye on that game, though, from the Auburn press box.
I want to see,
you know, how Oklahoma – I mean, that's a huge – without knowing a ton about how good Michigan's going to be, that's a huge opponent early in the season, a brand new year building. And then Auburn a couple of weeks later. Yeah. What do you got, Brett?
Tell me who y'all – want to win the game, or do y'all want Oklahoma to not look real good or to win and be high, you know, higher ranked, so Auburn looks better if they win.
I mean, I think you might be playing with fire wanting Oklahoma to look good this Saturday.
That's
if you're
good.
Auburn,
no way
you're playing
them.
No, I don't care who wins as long as I see weaknesses in Oklahoma.
Sure, I think if Oklahoma looks broken on Saturday, they've got a lot to fix, but that doesn't mean they're going to fix it. And so, that seems like an opportunity for Auburn to go in there in a couple of weeks and make a statement. Boy, are they under pressure. Look, they're under pressure no matter what with Jackson coming
in. Yeah, but if they lose to Michigan?
You lose to Michigan at home. Yeah. You can't lose to your former quarterback a couple of weeks later. That game is just enormous.
Enormous and Norman.
It is. Enormous. And so, I'm looking forward to I think that's one of the games, maybe the game of the week.
Yeah, I believe it is. Definitely the game of the week. But a thing I'm hoping for, I'm hoping that there are big flaws in Oklahoma's offensive line, and I'm hoping Michigan can run for about 4 yards a carry. Other than that, I don't really care who wins.
Right.
It's a big test for John Mateer, too. I mean, I know he played a couple of good teams last year. They beat Washington. They beat Texas Tech at Wazoo. But he didn't play anything like a top 15 Michigan team. So it's fun. You know, the all everything quarterback prospect. You know, the rare true freshman starting at a place like Michigan versus a quarterback like Mateer, who you know is worked his way up to being a really exciting player in a lot of folks' eyes.
Yeah, well, Mateer actually had four games where he didn't throw the ball well last year, even though it wasn't against a big-time schedule. But anyway, y'all have a great evening.
Good hearing from you, Brett. All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one as we come to you from Skybar here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Drive. Final segment here in hour number one. Our thanks to Justin Ferguson spending a couple of segments with us. Ferg normally with us, wherever we are, but he's getting ready to cover Auburn Opelika football, which is going to be getting underway 7 o'clock over at Bulldog Stadium. 6:30 is the airtime on Wings 94.3 with Jacob Goins, Rob Pate, and Jack Hudden. Should be a really interesting one. I mean, place has been sold out for a long time. This is the 100th meeting between the two schools. And, yeah, Opelika looking to, you know, snap Auburn's string of wins.
I bet you there are tailgaters that have been out there for a little while getting ready for a game like tonight. This is one of the great rivalries in Alabama high school football, the 100th edition. We're going to have it for you on Wings 94.3. Jacob and the gang live from Opelika. You're not going to want to miss it. This is like, I'm not even saying you should go, because like you said, it's been sold out for a while. If you don't have a ticket, stay away from the area would be my guess. But if you, that's something Justin mentioned on the podcast. If you got the opportunity tonight or tomorrow to check out some high school football, there's a lot of good games in the region.
And a lot of good football played here in this area.
And it's just, you know, the sights and sounds and smells of a local high school football game, right? It's one of the best things about, one of the best things about covering sports. And so, yeah, I encourage folks to check out the, if you get the opportunity. I mean, tonight's game is a heavyweight title fight. Tonight's game's a tough ticket. But check some out somewhere in the in the region, because there's some great football being played.
Yeah, it's good to be back with Auburn playing on Saturday. We're going to spend some time, as we will throughout the football season, with our good friend David Pascal. But then we'll get into, you know, reports of the visit list for Auburn. And as Jason Caldwell was saying yesterday, you know, Auburn has only got a couple of weekends available for players to visit, because they've got these two home games. Then they go on the road for two games ending up the month of September. So it'll be a while before they can get players in. And Auburn has made a concerted effort to bring in players that have committed elsewhere. Some of them used to be committed to Auburn, as a matter of fact. Auburn looking to bring players back, you know, because there was all that talk over the summer, you know, You know, is what kind of shape is the Auburn football program in? Oh, are they going to be able to have a winning season? They're going to struggle against Baylor. Hugh Freeze, who's calling the plays?
Is he
playing too much golf?
How close to par is this season going to be?
Yeah, and after that win over Baylor, I think quite a few players, especially looking at the games around the country this weekend, are going, hey, yeah, this wouldn't be a bad time to come in. So we'll look at the list of prospective players visiting in hour number two as well. But when we come back, David Pascoe from the Chattanooga Times Free Press and finishing up his radio show on location in Chattanooga, we will talk with him, get his thoughts on week one, and a look ahead toward week two of the college football season. That's coming up as we head into our top of the hour break from Skybar here on the Thursday Drive.
From Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive, Bill and Dan, and we're coming to you from Skybar here downtown, where they're going to be opening a little after we get off the air here this evening, but the start of a big weekend, first home football weekend. As Dan has said a few times, a lot of traffic downtown. I think there's a lot of excitement about this because of the way Auburn played, a lot of the young faces looking forward to seeing some of these people. And, you know, it's just the first home game of the year.
Tonight at Sky Bar, like you said, opening at 7 o'clock, they'll have trivia with Haley, the quiz mistress. You'll have DJ Ben Brood, friend of the show, listener, Drive listener, who's going to be on the ones and twos in the back throwback Thursday. Karaoke up front, pool tournament up front. Including, by the way, you see the new table they got over there, and some drink specials as well. That's tonight, and then all weekend long the party going. Trotline, Ty Reynolds tomorrow. Ty Reynolds also a Drive listener, but big shout out to Ty and the gang. And then Get Sideways on Saturday night. They'll be going late on Saturday with the game ending. Whenever it does,
game will end between 10 and 10:30,
well,
I say.
When's the game going to end? And then I guess when's the game going to end?
Over at the stadium.
The forecast could call for people sort of matriculating down to Sky Bar all night.
Saturday. It'll almost be a little disappointing if there aren't some folks that are heading out early because the game is decided.
I think the sooner you can turn this into a multi-score exhibition rather than a competitive, close football game, I think that's a vitally important thing for Auburn. Look, you can count on needing to do one thing or the other, but I think taking what Ball State gives you, you know, you should be able to have some pretty high percentage looks all night long, one way or the other.
You should, but I mean, just judging on the success or lack of that Ball State has had recently, I think you may be able to take what you want at times as well. So really looking forward to it, looking forward to seeing some of the young guys. We mentioned Hugh Freeze talking with the media after practice today, said Deuce Knights, they're going to be the number two guy on Saturday. They're hoping not to play Ashton Daniels, looking at the possibility of maybe getting a redshirt on him, using him in four or fewer ball games. Now, I would say this. I would think that if something happens to Jackson Arnold, I wouldn't be surprised if Ashton Daniels would be the next guy up. But this is an opportunity. Look, Deuce Knight, every opportunity you get that you have to get him out there. Let's see what he can do.
And there's still the possibility with Deuce Knight, depending on the kind of year Jackson has. Still the possibility Deuce Knight is competing to be your starter next
Jackson
year.
Arnold has a great year. You know, he's draft eligible.
And so you very well need Deuce Knight to get as many reps as possible on the off chance. Even if you're slapping a red shirt on Deuce, and I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to.
If the plan is.
I think the plan is Deuce is going to play some, and when they have a chance, they'll play him. Now, look, Auburn folks need to think about this. I mean, you should maybe be hoping that Deuce is competing for a starting job next year because Jackson's gone on. Because if he is, that probably means he has had a really good year. And you would think if Jackson Arnold has a really good year, there is a good chance that Auburn's had a pretty darn good year.
Yeah, I mean, and you can say, yeah, holding on to Jackson and Deuce next year, is it going to – you know what? That's a long way away.
That's right.
That's a long way away, and that's a problem Hugh Freeze isn't too worried about right now. But I do think getting Deuce on the field, especially in games like this, is probably a smart investment. And not to mention getting Jackson off the field as early
yeah,
as you
that's
can,
right.
knowing his
style. You want him healthy when you head on the road to open conference play in Norman.
Knowing his style of play and knowing, you're right, that game in Oklahoma is going to be – it's going to be muy, muy picante. Like, there's going to be a lot of spice on Jackson Arnold returning to his former team and playing them in Norman, especially. I mean, we'll see what it looks like. I can't wait to hear what our buddy David Paschal thinks of Oklahoma-Michigan this Saturday night.
Yeah, we'll get his thoughts, as a matter of fact, on that and more starting right now as we welcome in our good friend from Chattanooga, from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, just wrapping up his show. We're on location here at Sky Bar here this afternoon. David, where were you today?
Well, it's good to hear you guys again. Good to be back. Chattanooga is undergoing a huge minor league baseball metamorphosis. AT&T Field has been the home of the Lookout since 2000, but they're moving into a brand new park, Erlanger Park, next year that's going to be more than $100 million. This one, AT&T Field, was built for $10 million when it opened, and this one's going to be more than $100 million. So it is a big time. It's really neat. It's incorporating buildings that have been around since the 1880s. So it's going to be a really neat looking part for sure.
Hey, I love it when you can incorporate history in and not have it just sort of stand out like a sore thumb that, you know, here's something that doesn't fit into the history and tradition.
Yeah, and it's neat because Chattanooga, you know, will have had three ballparks. Ingalls Stadium, of course, that was used for the movie 42 with Jackie Robinson. There was a whole bunch of footage from shot in Chattanooga on that one. So a lot of history with that park. This will be just kind of the 25-year park. I mean, it was located right next to the Tennessee River. I mean, it was a great location. But again, like I said, that was a $10 million park. So $10 million parks don't last long these days. So you need those north of $50 million deals. And like I said, this is twice that. So this one has to last for a long, long time.
David, it was, pivoting to college football, and it's so great to have you back on. And week one was as loaded a slate as I can remember, including several SEC teams playing really interesting football games. You know, what were your big takeaways from the first real weekend of action in college football?
Well, it was interesting, and we can start with, let's skip last Thursday, but if you go to Friday and you go to Waco, and you also go to Boulder, Colorado, you had two games going on. Obviously, I was more focused on the Auburn game than Georgia Tech, but y'all were just talking about Jackson Arnold. I mean, he, you know, goes for 137 yards on the ground. Haynes King of Georgia Tech goes for 156 on the ground as they beat Colorado. And then when you think about the next day on Saturday, down in Tallahassee, Castellanos was so effective leading Florida State in running and rushing, and you even had Gunnar Stockton at Georgia against Marshall leading the Bulldogs in rushing. So a lot of quarterbacks leading their teams in the gate. That was a theme that definitely, that was pretty easy for me to perceive right away. It's like, wow, this – and I thought, you know, in Arnold's case, just how smart his runs were. I mean, think of how many of his carries, you know, went for first downs and they ended with him sliding – before anybody could get a shot. I mean, I just thought he definitely looked like he knew what he was doing in midseason form.
Well, he is so comfortable in this offense. That's one of the things that Hugh Freeze and he have talked about is this is an offense that he's been running, you know, pretty much his whole life. And it was nice to see Hugh talked about it at his press conference Monday and has mentioned it a couple of other times. Auburn taking what Baylor was giving him. They were definitely afraid of Auburn's receivers getting behind them. And in the past, we've seen Auburn try to force some things, try to go ahead and take an extra shot or two down the field. But in this case, Jackson Arnold and Auburn did not. They kept taking it, ran for over 300 yards, and you'll take that every week.
Yeah, and it's funny because I hearken back to some of Hugh Freeze's comments at Media Days. He's like, you know, it's very tempting, to your point, when you've got a Cam Coleman, to try to take the top off of a defense. But, I mean, they were incredibly patient, and I really was impressed with Auburn's offensive line. You know, and I don't want to overreact with one game because I could do the exact same thing with Tennessee. You know, sure. Tennessee had to replace four new starters up front. And they play a Syracuse team, and I don't know how good Syracuse is going to be, but they did win 10 games last year. They did beat Miami last year. And Tennessee with four new starters goes for 493 yards against the Power Conference team. So I really was impressed up front by both what Auburn and Tennessee were able to do. And conversely, you know, you heard all summer long how Alabama had the number one offensive line back according to Pro Football Focus, but I was really surprised how Florida State was able to get Ty Simpson just, you know, off and running so many times. But I know Alabama's also kind of had some injuries just about everywhere, including on that offensive line playing last week without Jaden Roberts.
Yeah, maybe as big a concern for me from Alabama is they looked maybe not disinterested, but they sure didn't look focused for that ball game.
How can you not? I mean, like I said, it sounds like cliche and coach speak, but, I mean, these guys do more stuff than we will ever know as far as off-season workouts and just around-the-clock stuff for 12 opportunities. And this is the first one. And it's against a quarterback who's talked some smack to you, during the off-season, and you come out and look that bland. I mean, that's... And the coordinators have addressed it this week, how DeBoer said it right after the game. We can't be playing on our heels. We played on our heels too much. It's just like, oh, my gosh, you're Alabama going into a hostile environment. This is what you should feed off of.
David, you would have believed that the defensive coordinator didn't even know who Gus Malzahn was. In fact, Kane Womack played for Gus Malzahn in 2006 in Arkansas. He was backup fullback to Peyton Hillis on that team, and yet Gus Malzahn had that kind of success against the Alabama defense. Maybe Florida State has made gigantic personnel upgrades at key spots from that team that looked adrift last year. Maybe Gus Malzahn has found a way to raise the dead again in college football, but it was a concerning performance by the Alabama defense, and you know they've had a superstar at quarterback for a couple of years in a row, and they didn't have that on Saturday either against Florida State.
No, they didn't, and it's interesting when you think about just how hard it's been to beat Alabama, and Florida State has a receiver, Squirrel White, who hopped in the transfer portal last year after some seasons at Tennessee. So that's actually there are not many players who have experienced three wins over Alabama, but
no,
Squirrel
right.
White, two with Tennessee and one with FSU, has done that. And then back to Malzahn, I mean, the fact that he was, you know, the Arkansas OC in 06, the year before Saban got there when Arkansas beat him and won the SEC West, and then you think about now, beating DeBoer in his second year, and then the wins over, Saban in between, one as coordinator and three as a head coach, but that is six wins over Alabama from one guy. That's pretty doggone impressive, given that that's, you know, arguably the greatest era this sport has ever witnessed.
Yeah, no question about it. Hey, you mentioned Tennessee. Yeah, very impressive debut for Joey Aguilar and company.
Yeah, I thought so too. I mean, you're talking about, it was kind of a little bit of a mixed bag because, you know, the defense finished in the top 10 last year and had like eight starters back. And you know, they had big plays. I mean, they're tied for the country in pass breakups. They had 10 of them. You know, they had an interception that was key that set up a short field. They had a fumble return for a touchdown. So they had huge plays, but they also gave up 377 yards which was obviously way above their average last year. But, yeah, for an offense with three new starters, eight new starters, only three returning players. Mm-hmm. And then right before the game, you know, they have a five-star tackle, David Sanders from Charlotte, who they decide can't go. So they had to shuffle their line at the last second. And for them to go out there and, I mean, that's just a dream offensive performance. 247 passing yards, 246 rushing yards. So you get the dream balance. And, yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, just because there's always that unknown. I mean, there was so much unknown with Auburn-Baylor. There was so much unknown with Tennessee-Syracuse, Bama-FSU. You know, it makes it one of – because Tennessee, if you look at their schedule overall, the teams that were picked 13th through 16th in the league, when you're talking about like Vandy, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Miss State, Tennessee gets to play all four of those. And so as a result, you know, really like Syracuse was probably one of their five most concerning games, and they wound up not having any trouble with them.
No, that was very impressive. However, I would say the most impressive SEC team was LSU because, my goodness, they played defense for the first time in a while. You know they always have talent. They just really their defense had been almost non-existent over the last few years, and they've got weapons on offense.
Oh, that was without a question the biggest win for the SEC. I mean, that was so impressive. I mean, you go back about 15 years with the Patrick Peterson and the Morris Claiborne and the Honey Badger and Barcavius Mingo and Sam Montgomery. I mean, just how good those LSU defenses were. And you're right, they have really been lacking. And, of course, Harold Perkins got hurt early last season and was shelved. And that was kind of a neat story, him coming back. Because, I mean, he broke on the scene so quick as a freshman that you were just like, oh, he's 3 years and done. But, I mean, he's making a huge difference, obviously, with Weeks at linebacker too. But that was really impressive. And I thought, actually, that game was kind of misleading. I mean, I thought LSU dominated that second half. I thought it was a horrible – I hate that rule about, you know, a pass reception. And the guy's totally got control of it when he's crossing the plane and goes all the way down to the ground. And then all of a sudden the ball, like, barely moves when it hits the ground and they rule it incomplete. That's just a rule they've got to change, because I thought that was that felt like a 24-10 LSU win, not 17-10.
I don't know exactly what is or is not a catch anymore, and it's sort of like pulling a slot machine lever when they go to the review on these situations. Let's look at this week, because you've got a couple.
Oh, yeah, there's some interesting games.
It's not as star-studded, but you got a playoff team going to Mississippi State in Arizona State. You got Kansas going to Missouri, and I think the game of the weekend, Michigan and Oklahoma, is a really interesting game for Brent Venables and company.
It most certainly is. And, I mean, you know, bringing in Mateer, bringing in his offensive coordinator, you know, they both come from Washington State. And I think that really just gives them a huge heads up, the fact that they were familiar with each other and could just hit the ground running. And, you know, Venables obviously is a defensive guy and just totally turns the keys over. So I just think that's a really potentially healthy situation for Oklahoma. You remember last year their receivers got banged up. They struggled up front on the line offensively. Their defense was pretty doggone good. I mean, just ask Alabama about that. So, I mean, I think this is a noticeably better team with Mateer. And that's nothing against Jackson Arnold. I just think it's a situation where you bring in Mateer, bring in his coordinator, and you kind of hit the ground running. And again, you know, it's been well documented. Arnold dealt with a lot of injuries around him. And if Oklahoma can stay healthy, that should be a significantly better team. It's a very unique challenge right away. I mean, Bryce Underwood could certainly put his stamp on college football by going to Norman his second game of his career and getting a win. But, you know, I just think Oklahoma being at home with Mateer being a little more experienced, you know, I think everybody thinks Underwood will be the better quarterback someday. It may not be Saturday. So I kind of like Oklahoma at home Saturday.
Yeah, and Dan mentioned Kansas, Missouri. I mean, Eli Drinkwitz was talking about a quarterback competition. They were going to, you know, let both the guys play, and Sam Horn goes out, and was it Horn that went down? No.
Yeah, Horn goes down
almost immediately.
And Prabula.
And he steps up and has a big game, but I still wonder about Missouri, but seems like we always do. But Kansas is a quality opponent coming in.
Yeah, this is one of those I don't pretend to know tons about either. I mean, they're both good quality programs that'll go to bowl games. I just kind of give the nod to Missouri. And you were talking about Sam Horn. What an unfortunate, because, you know, he's an Atlanta area kid and he's such a good athlete. And he underwent Tommy John surgery. You know, he plays both football and baseball for Mizzou. Underwent Tommy John surgery early last year. And so he missed, he came back for the very end of this season in baseball and then just immediately turns around and has a knee injury on his first carry of the season in football.
Yeah, and got drafted in the baseball draft this past offseason. Hopefully, you know, that this injury doesn't have, like, sort of long-term ramifications on his career. But, I mean, just because Prabula wins the position by default, you know, Homer Simpson said those are the two sweetest words in the English language, right? When you can win something by default. So I think I want to see what Missouri can do. That game, that's a fun one.
Like, I mean, Eli knows a little about offense.
Yeah.
You know what, on the opposite extreme, it's like, don't you dare lose this game. And it gets lost in the shuffle this week. But for the first time ever, Arkansas is playing Arkansas State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what's wild is, like, Butch Jones and Kalen DeBoer have the exact same record since the start of last year. They're both 9-5. Butch Jones has actually done a really good job turning that program around, because his first 2 years, they were 5-19, and it was kind of a mess. And so, you know, it's not in Fayetteville. It's in Little Rock. And it's just, I mean, I think Arkansas will win, but it's just like, oh, that would be the end of the world for Razorback fans to lose game.
You're not kidding. Hey, has South Florida got any shot at all in Gainesville? Gators have got trips to Baton Rouge and Miami the next two games, next 2 weeks.
I know. It is an interesting one. It is kind of a huge game in the scope of things, because if you look at this latest AP poll, you know, you've got like 10 teams from the SEC, 6 from the Big Ten, 4 from the ACC, 4 from the Big 12, and then you've got Notre Dame. And you've got zero Group of Five representation. And the reason because of that is what South Florida did to Boise State. And so, you know, I do think this is one of those things that if Florida does put it on them, then it's going to be hard for the Group of Five schools to really try to break through, because everybody's just going to consider them so second rate. But, you know, this line's like – I know it's in the swamp. This line's like 17.5.
17.5, yeah.
That just seems like a lot. I mean,
it does.
Billy Napier was really complimentary of Tennessee because, you know, Alex Golish obviously spent the first 2 years under Heupel there in 21 and 22. But he was talking about not only that offensive system that Tennessee runs, but how much better South Florida has gotten defensively, just like Tennessee under Heupel has continued to get better defensively.
Yeah, and then there's then there's Jeff Lebby and Mississippi State. You don't see, you know, it's tough to envision a lot of conference wins for that team right now. I know it's early. I like Jeff Lebby. He reminds me of the dad on Young Sheldon, and I think it'd be great to see him. It'd be great to see him pick up a win over a playoff team.
Oh, Dilly's pretty good, though.
Kenny Dillingham's got a team that feels pretty good, even if they didn't look great in week one.
Yeah, and that's where I don't want to overreact too much, but you're right. They did not look that great. And I vote in the AP poll, and it's tough that first week. I mean, it's easy to rocket Ohio State up there by beating Texas, rocket LSU up there by winning at Clemson, but you got so many teams that played nobodies that you're just like, how do you kind of adjust? And, you know, sometimes someone will win 65-0, and sometimes someone will win 38-21 or something, and you're just kind of like, what the heck? But this, what you talk about, a huge win for the SEC. It's an under-the-radar game, but if the worst team in the SEC last year beats the reigning Big 12 champs, that would be monstrous. And we'll see. I think this is a one-possession game. I think Mississippi State has a chance to do this.
Wow. You think I was looking at I saw Barstool Vandy had their route to the playoffs, and the first one is an obvious win at Virginia Tech. It's going to be tough, I think, for Diego and company.
You know, I do too, but I also think it's and obviously they've got to go on the road and do this, but I think that's where, like, going to a place like Auburn and winning last year, that's a bigger stadium, louder stadium than Lane Stadium. But the interesting dynamic to me is how much did Virginia Tech put in that South Carolina game? I mean, they talked all season long about that thing. I know this is a revenge game for them this week, but they do have 1 day shorter of prep, and the body's recovering and all that fun stuff. So You know, it's interesting. You know, when Vandy won last year and that game went into overtime and Nashville was a great finish. But when that game won last, when Vandy won last year, that felt like a legitimate upset. If Vandy goes up there and wins at Lane Stadium,
well, it won't. You're right.
It won't. It won't.
No.
Even though it's a road game this year.
No, you're right. I mean, so some fun games this weekend. David, really appreciate you you joining us. Really looking forward to doing this throughout the season. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you've got going, both on air and that you're writing.
Sure thing. Timesfreepress.com for the articles and WGOW.com for Sport Talk, which is on, I guess, what that would be 2 to 5 y'all's time.
All right, David. Thanks a lot, man. Where are you headed this weekend?
I'm going up to Knoxville for the mighty ETSU Buccaneers taking on taking on Tennessee. I do mostly Tennessee games, so that's
okay.
Where I'll be most Saturdays. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You should have a comfortable time then this weekend.
I would think so. Yeah, this will be a play a lot of. That's where Hugh Freeze was kind of funny being open about, you know, Deuce Knight and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen people ask Nick Saban, when do you expect to play the freshman, and he bites their heads off when he gets asked that.
Nah, this one, yeah. Hopefully, it's fun for teams like ours here this weekend.
Yeah, I think Hugh Freeze knows this better not be a one score game late, or he's got some splaining to do.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing about this game, and I know y'all need to run. The one thing about this game that was interesting is I didn't realize it was the 25-year anniversary of the Eagle flight. For some reason, I had it in my head that that was a longer tradition than that,
seems
but I
like
didn't realize it was 25.
Yeah, it seems like it. That's cool. Yeah, there are all kinds of things going on. David, thanks again, man. Have a great weekend, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.
You guys do the same. Take care.
David Paschal, great guy. Always great insight all around the SEC and the country.
That's a good point. A Tuberville-era tradition, right, that you might think
it does
has been
feel
around.
Like it goes back longer than
yeah.
that. Yeah. All right, we'll get to our – we need to get to break. Yeah, we're way behind, but – great when we have David on. Don't like to get any breaks in there. We'd love for you to join us. We're at Sky Bar here on the Thursday Drive. Give us a call on the Drive Hotline, which is sponsored by Sky Bar, 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Thursday Drive. Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan coming to you from Sky Bar. Reminder that tomorrow we're at the Plaza Bar and Lounge out on out at Midtown.
Courtesy of our friends at Sensegreen, who are putting us on the road every now and then. We're going to be on the road tomorrow at Midtown, at the Plaza. Always excited to be there. And, of course, today we are live downtown at Sky Bar. They're opening at 7 with a whole bunch of festivities, Throwback Thursday, karaoke, pool tournament, drink specials, lots of cool stuff tonight downtown at Sky Bar.
Yep. They've got all kinds of great things lined up for the entire weekend. And, of course, Auburn football tomorrow. This is not tomorrow. It's Saturday night. It feels like it's Friday. I don't know why. Because we've got high school football tonight.
Yeah. And
that's probably one of the reasons.
And Auburn played on a Friday last week.
Yeah, that's right. It's been a week.
Schedule. Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, you feel like it should be tomorrow. So, 2 days till Auburn and Ball State. We've talked a little bit about that. Hugh Freeze today ruling Damari Alston out, saying he doesn't see any reason to play him on Saturday. We know that Champ Anthony's out for a couple of weeks. Deuce Knight will be Auburn's number two quarterback. Hopefully you get a chance to see him fairly early on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I think the earlier Auburn can turn this from – a one-possession, close, competitive football game into something else, the better. And that means getting in some guys who maybe didn't play or didn't play a lot against Baylor, including some true freshmen there on offense. Deuce, Omar, some of the younger receivers, Sam Turner.
Yeah, you didn't see Bryce Kane or Sam Turner or Duke Smith.
Or Duke Smith. I think any number of those guys could get some reps.
I think folks are hoping to see some extended time for Perry Thompson.
Sure. I mean, I think Perry Thompson, showing off, you didn't see a lot of it in game one. This still seems like an offense with tremendous yards after the catch potential, and maybe you see more of that depending on how Ball State tries to play it. But, yeah, I think Perry Thompson would be another name to throw out there as someone that could get quite a few looks and quite a few reps against Ball State.
And we've talked about some of the running backs. You haven't really mentioned Darrell Robinson, who got one carry last week. I would think you're going to see more of the transfer as well.
They went to Darrell so late One, I wonder if it was after the Damari shoulder injury.
I think it
happened.
Was. It was right after that.
And it was also, like, I think they were comfortable just letting Damari and Cobb shoulder the load had they stayed healthy. Now you're going to see a little more Durrell, and I think we both expect Omar Mabson.
Oh, yeah, I would think the Auburn High product is going to get an extended run, hopefully, on Saturday. I can't wait to see, because we've heard so much about how impressive he has been throughout the entire, summer workouts and fall camp. And, of course, he was one of the top players in 7A football last year as a sophomore, as a junior. Yeah, because remember he was expected to be back for his senior year. So, I can't wait to see him as well. So, I mean, Auburn's got a lot of options.
The last 2 years he's been one of the most exciting running backs.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, last year he was almost unstoppable.
And he was almost unstoppable last year, and now making the jump from Auburn High School to Auburn U and probably making his debut on Saturday night. Yeah, can't wait to see. And this is an offense going into Friday night. We said, defenses have so much to worry about. There might be opportunities for the running backs to make big plays. On Friday against Baylor, it was the quarterback making big plays on the ground and the running backs keeping the chains moving, getting the tough yards.
Right. I think part of that was, though, the way the safeties were playing for Baylor. I mean, I think it was Jason. It may have been Brian, but I think it was Jason talking about the fact that their safeties weren't really coming up to stop the run. They were staying put about 10 yards off the line of scrimmage because they didn't want a receiver to run by them. So that kept there from being any of that space available. A lot of times when you see backs breaking big runs, it's because they get past that initial front and there's only a player or two in the back end. Baylor had, four guys back there.
And I think big plays are almost a bonus for Auburn this year. If they can keep the chains moving and stay on schedule, the onus is on the defense to do enough to stop it. And if Auburn can make big plays, it only makes things even tougher. But no, I feel like with this defense that Auburn's going to face on Saturday, and the thought that you could see a lot of Cobb, Clobber and Cobb, you could see Omar make his debut, you could see more Darrell Robinson. I think the possibility is there. Look, if they want to play conservative and worry about the receivers, there could be big plays on the ground for the Auburn running backs.
Yeah, so, again, the weather's going to be a little bit warmer. Doesn't look like any chance of rain, but it'll still be nice. Looking forward to all the amenities, too. I mean, all the new lights, the scoreboard there in the north end zone, all the things that are new for this year.
And for longtime fans, the Pat Dye reunion, I think, will be really cool. The dedication of Pat Dye Field with the on-field logo, the on-field imagery, and then also the thought that you're going to have players coming to the game.
So many former players.
Players, coaches, staff, their families. I mean, I think if you're a longtime fan, this game, you need to be there just to see who's going to get recognized at halftime, right? Some of these names that you're going to see and some of these players that are going to wave because, I mean, some of the biggest names of the Dye era, I imagine, are coming back for this reunion.
Oh, you know they will. It's all part of the excitement that is heading up for this Saturday night over at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Tell you what, we'll go ahead and get to our next break because we're still a little behind. We'd love for you to join in. Any thoughts you have about this game, any of the players you'd like to see, what are you looking forward to, or thoughts on any of the ball games coming up this weekend, as well as we continue with the final 20 minutes or so of the Thursday drive from Skybar.
Experience enough. Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan coming to you from Sky Bar. Again, we're on location again tomorrow at the Plaza Bar out at Midtown. And then a reminder that coming up, we're less than an hour away from pregame for Auburn Opelika The huge matchup here, I mean, it is as big a rivalry as there is in the state, which will be coming up over at Bulldog Stadium, and you can hear all the action starting at 6:30 over on Wings 94.3.
Love that it's a region game too, right?
Yeah.
It's not a non-conference game for these two teams. A little extra.
Yeah, that was odd. I mean, it was odd. There were a couple of ways. I mean, first of all, you used to end the season playing against each other, and it meant an awful lot as far as playoffs. And then Auburn goes to 7A, Opelika stays 6A, game gets moved up early in the season. It still meant so much, bragging rights and everything, but now it means even more because of the implications for possible postseason.
Yeah, so that's going to be on Wings 94.3 tonight. Jacob and the gang will have coverage of Auburn and Opelika, the 100th meeting between the two. We will be back tomorrow. We're on the road, going live to Midtown, to the Plaza, courtesy of our friends at Sensegreen. And again, big thanks to our friends at Skybar for having us.
Oh, absolutely.
Today, and the party's going to be going all weekend long at Skybar. Throwback Thursday tonight. Ty Reynolds and Trotline tomorrow night. Get Sideways on the backstage on Saturday night, going after the game, right?
I mean,
they're going late night. Now, I've been here after the game before.
I remember those days.
That's right. Yeah. So I'll big shout out to our friends at Sky Barn again. Happy 20th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier that Auburn really been working to get players in for this weekend, including players who have. Who may have committed elsewhere, and there is a big list. Let me see: 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
You think Auburn trying to make some
9, 10? Looks like about a dozen players who are committed to other schools coming in,
trying to make some pancakes this weekend. You think
hoping to get some flipping done,
trying to do a little flipping this weekend. I mean, and some of those guys are committed to mid majors. You were telling me
some of them are, but I mean, we'll look at the list of guys that are expected to be in this weekend. As I said, some of these are familiar names. Shedarius Tootle was committed to Auburn from down in the Mobile area, then committed to Georgia, but he is visiting this weekend. Corey Wells, brother of another. As a matter of fact, the brothers Wells are visiting. Chris is a South Alabama commit. Corey, the defensive lineman, is a Texas commit. They'll be in. Chris is coming in on an official visit. Corey, it's an unofficial visit. Florida State commit Xavier Tiller is a four-star tight end from Langston Hughes High School over in Georgia, is coming in. Lasiah Jackson is a four-star cornerback from Lee County, Georgia, who is a Stanford commit who's coming in. Tico Crittenden, a defensive lineman from Lithonia, Georgia, committed to Florida State. So Auburn with a couple of Florida State commits coming in. Deshaun Spencer is a receiver out of Saraland, committed to Duke. He'll be in this weekend. David Aboya, a receiver from Milton, Florida, committed to Southern Miss. Running back Cooper Crosby out of Gulfport, who's committed. Yeah, we're getting into some mid-majors. He's a Louisiana commit. DeMarcus Broughton out of Mary Montgomery is a South Florida commit. Quantavius Wiggins, another player out of Langston Hughes, an FIU commit. Taron Essex is a safety out of Southwest DeKalb.
Hey, Western these
Kentucky
are some,
commit.
These are some schools that Auburn has gone to in the past for some successful players.
It is.
Yeah.
And then Jared Dowdy is an offensive lineman who's committed to Georgia State out of Banneker. So that's about a dozen players that are committed elsewhere. But, yeah, it's almost an even split of Power Four and, smaller school commits that Auburn's bringing in this weekend.
And, I mean, with the group Auburn already has committed, you wonder if they would take a handful of those players and maybe call it a day.
It's going to be interesting because, again, I don't think they're looking at the biggest class, looking at probably somewhere between 15 and 20. Depending on
where they're at,
now, 8, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so you take a handful of the 12, and you're sniffing. You're getting closer to 15.
There are also some pretty prominent targets that they'd like to bring in at other spots. You know, the Georgia game, the Alabama game.
They got some big fish. They're big game hunting out there. So, no, this is one of several important home weekends for recruiting for Hugh Freeze and his staff.
But think about it. There are only two here early on with Auburn playing, three of their first five road games, three of their first five games on the road, then an open date before Georgia.
And then that Georgia game, which we talked about earlier, it's promising start. You keep this rolling. That game is one of the biggest games in years, and especially because I don't know how many games Georgia's going to lose between now and then. And I know they got a couple.
Georgia's got to go to Knoxville and then host Alabama. I mean, they do have Kentucky. They ought to be Kentucky. But that road trip to Knoxville followed by they do have an open date before Alabama comes in. But that's a couple of interesting games back-to-back for Kirby and company.
Real tests for George and the gang. So, yeah, I think that's a those are a pair of you've got a pair of home games to get some recruiting done, but then you're right. Cam Stutz scooters right by us there. I don't know if you saw that. That's our old buddy Cam Stutz there scootering right by us. But it's great to see that the recruiting, the home cooking can get going again.
Yeah, I mean, and that's another one of the things. Remember, there were concerns about when Auburn lost some commits, when there were all the questions about who's calling plays, how many quarterbacks are they going to play, how healthy is Hugh Freeze, how hot is his seat. Right now, I think he's feeling pretty comfortable. But again, like you said, you sure don't want to have a game that you feel like, oh, crap, we're going to have to sit here and it be a concern as you head into the fourth quarter or the final half of the fourth quarter. 334-321-1390. It's still time for you to join us. We'd love for you to give us a call here on the Drive Hotline as we get to our final break here on the Thursday Drive from Skybar.
Auburn, the legend.
On ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Final segment of the Thursday Drive from Skybar with Bill and Dan. Did you see the College Sports Commission issued their first full update on the NIL situation? Did you see that?
No. What's the word?
They said they have approved, they've cleared more than 8,300 NIL deals worth $80 million. No. So that right there tells you the deals that have been approved, Dan. I mean, you don't have to be really good at math to come up with a ballpark number. That means they're averaging about $100,000 each.
I would be interested to know, though, what the rejection numbers look like
CSC. I'm glad you asked, because they said there have been 332 deals not cleared. 75 of those have been resubmitted.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
You're only talking 250 that have not been cleared as compared to 8,300 that have been cleared.
Right, and I mean, they were going to crack down especially hard on deals that involved a relationship between the program and the sponsor.
Right.
But even those, a lot of those can be worked out to where they pass the test. It's led to, I don't know if you were necessarily expecting seismic changes from the.
I think some people were.
Well, I think especially now that the football started again.
Right.
It seems like business as usual.
The commission said, and I'll quote here, said the most common clearance issues were delays in attesting to or providing required information, contradictory deal terms, misreporting of deal terms, or mistakes in entering deal terms, and deals that don't satisfy the, quote, valid business purpose.
It's really easy to check the wrong box or not submit enough information, but it doesn't seem like, it seems like the CSC is operating as a lot of folks expected it was going to going into the season. I mean, to be honest, now that we have football games to break down, great.
I just thought those numbers are, it appears most of the deals are going through, and they do say that The values of the deals ranged as high as that they have approved as high as $1.8 million. So that means that yes, it's not as seismic a change as some people thought might be happening. But it looks like I think most of the people that are involved were prepared for that, because you know we haven't seen or heard of mass exoduses of players from schools yet.
No college football tonight. You've got the
NFL.
You got the NFL game, the first NFL game of the season, Cowboys and the Eagles. Eagles favored by a little bit more than a touchdown in Philadelphia, defending Super Bowl champions.
That's a pretty feisty rivalry.
Yeah, I want to say, I mean, especially with a healthy Dak Prescott early in the season, the Cowboys. No Micah Parsons as he's been traded to Green Bay, but we'll see what the Cowboys can do in Philly. That game on NBC tomorrow. Tomorrow night,
Are there any college games of note tomorrow?
Tomorrow you've got Louisville JMU. I don't believe you have.
I didn't notice anything. I don't believe
you have a major conference game. You have four major conference versus mid-major games on the schedule. You have an NFL game tomorrow night, which is maybe part of that.
Okay, that's a reason.
The YouTube game between Kansas City and the Chargers live from Brazil. That's tomorrow night. But tonight, NBC and Peacock.
I don't see that one. I can see Europe. I can see a lot of places. I just didn't think of Brazil being a hotbed for the NFL.
I mean Brazil. You know what it is? The fact that it's easy for them because they're on the same time zone.
Yeah, I guess.
As the United States, you can maybe make it a little bit easier to watch the games. You know, on television and sending the occasional game to Brazil probably helps with that a little bit.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, we've had a great time here at Sky Bar this afternoon. Again, we're back with you tomorrow on the road out at the Plaza Bar, Midtown. So hopefully you can join us on the line. We'll be there from 2 to 4. We're there 4 to 6. Don't forget, coming up in just a half an hour over on Wings 94.3, it's pregame for Auburn Opelika High School football.
Tonight at Sky Bar, Throwback Thursday with DJ Ben Brood, karaoke, pool tournament, drink specials, they're open at 7. Trivia with Haley, the quiz mistress, as well. So do not miss that. Plus, cool stuff going on all night, you know, Friday, Saturday night. You're not going to want to miss it. Sky Bar, downtown Auburn. Happy 20th.
That's going to wrap things up for the Thursday edition of The Drive. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.